This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLING soap.com.
Looking for the perfect gift for that basketball fan in your life? Well, I've got a book for you. It's called Basketball Now. Newly updated for 2025, it spotlights 50 of the NBA's top stars. Think fast breaks, clutch threes, and buzzer beaters. Captured in stunning photography with sharp, readable analysis. From rising stars to veteran icons, this book is a courtside pass to the game right now. Wrap up a slam dunk this holiday season and pick up your copy of Basketball Now today at your favorite bookseller.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Sports History Network in conjunction with Spook Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Spook, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. You can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. At this time, I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails Portland, Oregon, the one and only Joe Squire. Joe,
welcome. Great to be back. Great to be back, Captain. I will admit, it is always, first of all, thank you, Jeff Payne, for stepping in while I was out last week. But it is always fun to watch the show and listen to you and Jeff go back and forth. Obviously, he is a fountain of knowledge of football. Yeah, but I have to admit, it's like, you know, looking in the bedroom window, you know, of your spouse fooling around with someone watching you too. It tears at my heart a little bit. I will admit it, Captain.
Well, it keeps you on your toes, Joe.
It's like,
I know you traditionally compensate and overexcel on the show after one of your breaks and one of your vacations or whatever. So
I guess now we know how Steve Young felt sitting on the bench watching Joe Montana take snaps. So
not much changed after 13 years. It's pretty much the same. We see it. So it's good. It's a good thing. Tonight we have a complete open forum. We're going to talk a little bit about junk wax along with now junk slabs. And for a variety of reasons, we're going to talk about it. A lot of it has to do with my experiences lately doing sports card shows here in the Wilmington, North Carolina area.
Oh, yeah. You are on the battlefield. You are boots on the ground, Captain.
Scares me what I see, so on and so forth. But we'll talk about it as we go along with the show. One real quick piece before we get started. I have a very large, that's our latest.
I'd like to talk about your latest, episode two. Volume.
What I normally, anybody knows me knows I have a very large library of football books, and especially now in off season, I try to get caught up on reading, reread books, so on and so forth. And this is a book I found. I know I moved with it, but I honestly don't remember the last time I read it. It had to have been about over 20 years ago. And what it is, it's called Gridiron Grenadiers, which is a history of the Army football team and Army football. And it was written in 1948 by a Tim Cohen, who was a known writer, sports writer at the time. And it was a Putnam Sons printed book. It's a hardcover book. Beautiful book.
What's the front cover? What's the front cover look like?
Yeah. I don't have the dust jacket, but it's like an embossed Grenadiers in it. And I started reading it last night. I got up to page roughly 80. Great, great discussion on the history of Army football. And it really, you know, puts a lot of things in perspective on how football evolved, so on and so forth. And it's nice because it stops in 1948. Which is right after World War II, obviously, heyday of Army football during the late 30s, early 40s, during the war years, a few years after that. No way near comparing to what Army football is today, which is much different. All the service academies being dramatically different. But it's a nice historical view of Army football. And I looked at it as being a real traditional introduction to the bizarro world of football card collecting today. And just as an aside, and I've talked about this in the past on the show and also in the magazine, I've always believed there's several different eras of football cards. The first era being basically 1894 to 1945, or you could start with the Beecher card in 1888. To 1945, not much out there, a lot of postcards, a lot of player photos, single cards of very obscure sets, so on and so forth. Then right after World War II, we'll start with 1946, and we'll go up to 1972, which was the last year of Topps series and cards. Yep. And then we'll go from 1973 to 1988, or 89, which is basically the ending of basically a couple sets, two, three sets a year, to the explosion beginning in 1989 of pro set score to lead us to our fourth era of football cards, which is just totally out of control, 1990 to 2025.
Yep.
That's where I'm going to start off today. And our show, we're going to talk a little about junk wax and junk slabs now. Two points I want to make, and then I'm going to hand off to you. Number one, back in the early 90s, I worked for a small card shop in Meriden, Connecticut. It was called Collectible Investments. He just didn't have sports memorabilia and cards. He did coins. He did stamps. He did a lot of toys. He did coins, so on and so forth. He had a lot of different stuff, but he made a lot of money on cards at the time. And back then, it was not unheard of. If you worked at a card shop, you got paid in cards because there wasn't enough money for the proprietor to pay you because he was constantly putting his money back into new wax because there was so much wax out there, you had to continue to keep up with it, so on and so forth. So I basically worked in a card shop during the junk wax era. And I worked at that shop from roughly 1990 up to 93 until he
don't
started.
Think I knew that. Don't think I knew that, Bob.
I'm sorry?
I don't think I knew that about you, that you...
I'm pretty sure I talked about it before, but it was roughly a four-year period. I worked part-time. I worked anywhere from 1 to 3 days a week. A lot of times when he did a show, I would cover the store the entire weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And I got to know a lot of people, and I was pretty, you know, I was knowledgeable about sports cards and memorabilia, so I handled the customers without much problem, so on and so forth. And then 1993, he decided he had enough of the business. He had undergone several personal problems. He lost his wife. He was getting older. He just didn't want to do it anymore, and I understood, so on and so forth. So he gave me an opportunity if I wanted to buy the store from him at an incredibly high price, which I didn't have the money for. And I said, no, I'll pass. But I said, if anything you're going to get rid of, let me know. And, you know, I'll take it from you. So I got a lot of junk cards that he was ready to throw out. And I took, so on and so forth. And that was basically my experience working in a shop during the junk wax era. The second point I'm making out, I want to make out to the past 3 years I've been doing shows down here. I'm just seeing so many slabbed cards to the point that I don't know who's buying what and why and how there's any value to what is being graded today. And I can really see there is no one who's going to come to my table or any table there, with the exception of a few old-time collectors, and say, do you have any such and such a year, 56 tops football, I want to finish my set type of thing. I don't see a young kid coming up to me and say, hey, do you have any 2023 Don Roos football, I need to finish my set. That doesn't occur today.
But also, your display case isn't quite, you know, the harpy song for modern collectors either.
Exactly. And a lot of stuff they have no clue what they're looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that, because I'm more than happy to explain to them what this is, what that is, so on and so forth. And the last two shows I did in Wilmington were bad shows. I didn't make my table spots either show. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I put out probably 3,000 to 4,000 in material on my tables. And if I can't pull down $170 to cover my table fees, there's something wrong with what's going on out there.
Yeah.
So what's wrong? Pokemon, and that's not necessarily wrong, but that's driving a lot of these shows.
Yep.
And new, in my opinion, junk slabs are driving a lot of shows. And just one final point before I hand off to you. And I know I mentioned this on Vintage Football Collectors. I'm at the show, and there are two young guys across from me, and all they're doing is basically opening up wax the entire show. They're selling a few things. They got a lot of high-end slab cards, so on and so forth. And he opened up a box of 2024 Don Roos football, and he basically took maybe 3 or 4 cards out of the box, and there's a big garbage pail right next to my table. He took the box with the cards and dumped it in the garbage.
Wow.
Which to me is, it really hurts me to see that, number one, for two reasons. Number one, there are a lot of kids who are disadvantaged, they're poor. They'd give their right hand to get some new cards, even if they didn't open the packs, just to have a card.
Correct.
And number two, this is how a new dealer, a young dealer, respects the hobby.
The chase card. Yeah.
Taking brand new cards you spent, whatever it was, $70, $80 for the box, and throw them out. And the next morning when I went back to the show, because it was a 2-day show, I said to myself, I can't allow this to happen. So I you know, call me a garbage picker. I went into the barrel. I took the bulk of the box and the cards out. And I said, I'll send it to some kid or give it to a kid who wants the cards.
Yeah,
that's it. And that's exactly what I did over the past couple of days. Jared Krause, who's our illustrator, has a nephew in Nebraska. I sent him a couple thousand cards in the mail the other day. And I took all those 2024 Don Roos cards. I put them in the box. Let him go through it. He'll have some fun with it, type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, but it's wrong. I don't like seeing that stuff anymore. And
you also had a story from, you know, what was it, the late 80s, early 90s, where you were at a show and a dealer was like, hey, you want some of this football? I brought it here hoping to sell it. I didn't sell it. I'm going to throw it away. You know, give me a couple bucks for it.
Right.
So, I mean,
$5 cheese box stories that I have.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the football's been the redheaded stepchild. You know, for a long time, it was the second most collected sport, with the basketball and hockey. Basketball's overtaken football you know, and Pumpkin Bond's overtaken it all, non-sport. But I mean, so there's been the, I mean, even I've told you, I remember buying 88 Topps football boxes from a guy in Seattle for $5 a box.
Right.
It cost more to ship them to me. So I met him midway between Seattle and Portland. And, you know, I had 130 boxes of 88 wax, you know, and now they're worth, you know, $100 each. So
it doesn't make any sense. And I saw that for myself when I was at the Atlantic City National. I'm looking at the guy in the table literally across from me, and I'm looking at an 89 Topps wax box for $65. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, how is that worth $65? Yeah. We couldn't give it away for $5.
Totally.
Back in 91, 90. Who's in the set?
Back in 2007, 2008, you couldn't give it away. I mean,
right. And he's saying to me, no, it's you know, and he had Pro Set 1990 Series 2 Pro Set for $50 a box. I said, you have got to be kidding me. There is a warehouse in Texas right now where there's still unopened cases of that the guy who bought out the inventory and did the bankruptcy for them still can't give that stuff away.
Yeah.
You're telling me I'm going to spend $50 for that? Come on.
Yep.
Yeah. This was ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
Everything's in a cycle. You know, like we just said, you know, 15 years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago, somebody's giving you vintage, you know, modern football, 1980, 1985, you know, whatever. I forget what year it was, but, you know, or throw it out. And, you know, 15 years ago, 88 Topps football worth $5 a box. Now, you know, that's 20%. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's just totally illogical to me what I'm seeing in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hate to say, but I pretty much picked the junk wax bubble quite well. I'm going to say the junk slab bubble is going to be upon us very quickly. I truly predict there's going to be a lot less sports card memorabilia shows, and they're all going to be Pokemon gaming type card shows. And that's it. Like me, I'm going to be selling out of my house. I will not be.
They'll bifurcate. They'll just bifurcate. They'll have Pokemon shows. You know, I mean, the Sports Card National, you're seeing its wax, you know, wax rips and stuff like that. But I was talking to you a little bit before the show about some of the homework, because you and I have talked about junk wax before.
Yeah.
And we consider the junk wax era to be when Steve Largent retired, 1989. We've mentioned it.
Yeah.
That's my flagpole is when Steve Largent retired, the hobby went to crap.
Good observation on your part.
Hey, that's why I'm here. So we've talked about it before. I'm a metrics kind of guy. Math don't lie. And so I was like, well, let's look it up. No better litmus of, you know, where that, you know, Maginot line is than the PSA registry. So I went in. I'm like, well, let's look at how many registry sets there are per year. I did a Gridiron article on this. What is the most popular set based on three different years? Over 9 years, three different times that I went and looked. 1955 Topps All-American is by far the number one most collected vintage set.
Mm-hmm.
That's 35 to 89, 229 sets right now. I looked yesterday.
Okay.
Number two, 57 Topps with 166, 69 Topps with 157. And then, you know, you start mixing up 59 Topps, 141, 72 Topps, 135, 71 and 55 Bowman, 123, 84 Topps, my favorite, 92. And then it kind of, 89 Score is the last time you get a really big registry set. 71 registry sets for 89 Score versus 18 registry sets for 89 Topps, your beloved 89 Topps.
Wow.
18
wow.
registry sets. So the next time a registry, the number of people collecting a set having a registry set breaks any number above 10 is 1998 with 14. The 98 finest set has 14 registry sets. You get a little bit of a blip. The 2000 collector's edge set has 97 people with registers. I was like, well, that's kind of an interesting blip to be like, 7 to 9 and then, 14 to 98, 97.
So I went and looked. What drives that collector's edge set? Do you know?
I went and looked. I was just curious. First of all, it's 49 cards.
Okay. All right.
Pretty
yeah.
easy.
All right.
Relatively cheap, and it's got a lot of good stars in it. Still has Brett Favre, still has Randy Moss, etc. After that, 2001 Finest is 15, 2000 Upper Deck Premium 21. This is where you're about to pull your hair out. I wrote a couple of these down just because it was funny. 2017 Panini Donruss Optic has 12. And I was like, Panini Donruss Optic. Have you ever heard of that? The Panini. And I was like, I wonder if Bob knows if there's a parallel refractor prism of that.
I'm sure there is. I mean, I have no clue. So
the next one is, 2017, the Panini Donruss Optic has 12. And then in 2021, Panini Donruss Optic Downtown refractor has 12. So I love how they make up names for these. So 229 people have registry sets for 55 Topps All-American. All right. Well, the second measure of this would be how many cards have gotten graded. So some people collect players, some people collect other things. Maybe there's a Packer collector who doesn't have a, there's a 57 Packer collector who doesn't have a registry set.
Right.
So what I did is I'm going to do a quick screen share here just to show you guys what I got. Boom. Okay. So here are, you can see that, I believe.
Yeah.
Here are the total number of football cards that have been graded.
12 million cards.
12 million football cards.
Oh, my Lord.
One registry set in 1894. Obviously, we know what that is. You get all the way down to 1935. There are 7 sets, 80 items, 8,002 cards have been graded. Is the gist of it. So I'm going to throw out one more, and then I'm going to hang on. Find that. There we go. You can see that. And you can see in 2007, this is Pop Report. This is by population. So in 2007, there are 60 registries with 14,850 various cards, 71,000 cards been graded. So this is where it starts to fall off a cliff. In 2007, 70,000.
Can you show that file? I got the regular.
Oh. What are you seeing right now?
I'm just seeing your regular screen. Yep.
Oh, gotcha. All right, let me grab that.
Switch out and let's see that file. Just for effect.
Yep, there it is.
See how ridiculous this has become. Yeah, okay, that's good.
There. So you can see in 2007, 71,000. Again, we need to discuss having a producer next year. 71,000. This is how many cards have been the Pop Report per year. So 59,058 cards in 2008. That's across every, every set. So you can see the numbers,
1 million. What's
266,922 in
23.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where it gets a little big. I'm going to give you some comparison numbers because 2020, you can see there, is the biggest. 1,000,000 519,572 cards, football cards, have been graded in 2020. So let me give you a comparison. In 1948, that's Bowman and Leaf, there are 36,000 total cards graded. In 1952, 40,000. 55, which includes the most popular set ever collected, the 55 Tops All-American, there are 96,000 cards graded. So so the most popular vintage set, 1955 Tops All-American, with 229 registry sets, 96,000 cards in 55, and that would obviously include a 55 Bowman and a 55 AA. 96,000 cards graded. There are more than 15 times more cards graded in 2020 than in the most popular vintage set.
That's
1957. You have 70,000 cards graded. 58, you have 45,000. 61, you have 81,000. And 65, which includes the Philly and your favorite top tall boys, top 75,000. And then it starts to get a little what we call, you know, vintagey. It's 1970, it's 104,000. 72, it's 136,000. And look at this right border here. You know, this is how many cards have been graded. 1972, one of the most popular sets, 136,000. I mean, there are, you know, you take these last, you know, 7 years, and there's nothing that compares to it. My favorite set, 1984, 177,000. So 50% more than 72. 1989, you start to get the junk wax. So 84 is 177, 86 is 152,000. And then you break into junk wax. I don't have it here, but 1989,
291,000. Well, yeah, the 89 score, you had a lot of pros that got graded. Absolutely. And you had the tops that got graded.
So, and that's all of it. And then it just keeps going up. 98, 265,000, 99, 250,000, 2000, 578,000. 2017, and you can see, 2017, 291,000. In 2020, 1,520,000 cards graded. There were more cards graded in 2020 than there were in 19, and all football cards from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
That's crazy. That's crazy. But you know,
in 2020, there are only, there's only 12 registry sets.
Yeah. Yeah.
The takeaway from this is people are collecting players. People are flipping cards. Modern collectors don't collect registry sets.
They don't collect sets either. They may collect the players from their favorite team if there is one. They're not making a complete set. A complete set is literally impossible because of all the short prints.
Yep.
And there's no interest in it. And again, I look at a couple of things that occurred at the past two shows. The first show I did was in American Legion Hall. There are so many young people that carry around their cases of graded cards.
Yes.
It's like a ritual almost, walking around, hitting people with the boxes, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Can I leave my box on your glass display case and hopefully it won't crack the case or whatever, that type of mentality type of thing. But they then hole up with another dealer, usually a younger person, and they're trading off all these cards. And, do you want to trade for this? Do you want to trade for that? And I'm watching the guy next to me was trading with this other guy. And they must have traded about 45 cards. And he's got to go to his phone for every card because he has to get the last sale on it, so on and so forth. And he finally showed me, because I asked him, can you show me what that app is? What does it really mean? And so he explained it to me. He gave me a good explanation. So I said, okay, so does that incorporate all sales, even from a card store? Oh, he said, no. That's a, it's just
Public sales.
Amazon's, eBay. But I said, well, what about a guy that buys the card at a shop and say that card's worth $100, but he pays $150 in the shop? I said, well, you know, that doesn't happen in this. Well, I said, well, you're actually cutting yourself out of $50 more for the card, because if it does sell for that much in a card shop, oh, it won't happen. Well, I said, how do you know? I don't understand it. So anything that eBay sells and anything some auction sites sell, and I heard there's another, you know, it was a good education for me. There's a app called What's Not. I think that's the right one. And they immediately just auction cards in 30, 40 seconds. They put a price on it. It gets auctioned off, and it's mostly for Pokemon, but they're doing a lot of sports cards on it. So anyways, he says, you know, one dealer was saying, I sell probably $2,000-$3,000 cards on this app in one night, you know, just flipping them over type of thing. So I said, okay, so you're just flipping the cards. You're really not selling anything to a collector type of thing. You're just flipping to the flipper who's going to flip it. And try to, and so you're going to mark up this card 6-7 times by the time it ends up wherever it ends up. I don't understand how, you know, how that's a hobby. It's not a hobby. It's
a business.
A stock market more than anything else, you know.
Well, that's exactly what you said. I mean, how tedious is that to look up every single card?
Well, that's what they're doing the whole show. I mean, I've been next to two dealers in two shows. They're on their phone the entire show. There's a little interaction there, especially for the Pokemon dealers. They got to talk about what a great pull they made on this. And I found out there's a new term now. It's called off shelf. So when the box or the game or whatever it is not available, it becomes off shelf. I had a 12-year-old kid tell me that. I said, what are you talking about?
Hold up, Bob. I got to pause on that. I had a 12-year-old kid tell me that. I love that.
He says it's off shelf. I said, all right, so explain it to me. I'm old enough to be your grandfather. Explain it to me what off shelf. And he gave me a good explanation. I said, so in other words, it's out of print. No. It's off shelf. You can still find it.
Yeah. Okay. Next year, that'll just be OS, off shelf. It'll be an abbreviation. Well, as I mentioned, 2020 has more cards graded 1,520,000 than the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s combined. So you're probably curious what a couple of these sets were. I'm about to really make you pull what hair you have left off, you know, after throwing some of those out. So I went into 2020 and looked, dominated by Panini.
Well, they're the only ones printing. They got the
which is why, obviously why. Panini Donruss had 92,000 cards graded. Panini Donruss Optic, the Optic offshoot, had 122. Panini Mosaic, 284,000. Have you ever heard of Panini Mosaic?
I've heard of it. I don't know one from the other.
Panini Prism, 236,000. So here's a couple of them. They're in alphabetical order. Nothing other than alphabetical. Absolute Football with Oregon Duck great Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
2020 Certified Football. These, I hate to say it, these aren't bad looking.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're, you know, I get it. I get their flashy cards. They're, you know, Elite. A heck of a lot nicer than an 89 Pro Set or score.
Oh my, yeah. Look at this. Look at this Oregon Duck Justin Herbert. Look at that. Yeah. That's a beautiful card. There's a draft. Leave Joe Burrow when he's at LSU. Leaf Flash of Greatness. That hurts my eyes to look at. That looks like somebody sent me a glitter bomb. Metal Draft Football. Joe Montana. Joe Montana retired in 95. 15 years later. They're,
25 years, he's still printing cards. Yeah. So, I mean, that really says something right there. So
here's a Justin Herbert Oregon Duck Trinity Football. Leaf Ultimate Draft. Oh my gosh. Limited. Panini Black. Panini Chronicles. Panini Chronicles Draft Pick. Can you see the subtle difference between those two?
Oh, yeah.
Panini Contender. Panini Contender Draft Pick. Oh, wait. That's the same. Okay. Panini Contender Optic. There it is. There's that Optic offshoot. Elemental. What was it? It was Panini Mosaic. So we're coming up on that. Panini Encased. Russell Wilson, Seahawk great, Super Bowl winner. Panini Flawless. Panini Flawless Collegiate Football. Panini Gold Standard. And look at the right bar. I'm only about a third of the way down. Panini Honors. Let's check out this Mosaic. we'll put up with this Panini.
Impeccable.
The tsunami of Panini here to find out what that Mosaic looks like. There it is. Panini Mosaic. Oh my God, that
looks
is
like a church windows.
What the heck? That is ugly.
Wow, that is. Look at the type of boxes they have. They have hobby boxes, choice boxes, a blaster box, a mega box.
Autograph stained glass. This must be the stain. Wow. The Panini Mosaic football stained glass. And look at that New York Jet future Hall of Fame quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
Wow.
Bob, I really enjoy poking fun at you, but if this is a one-way street, why bother? All right, Panini Treasure Football. Look at this.
I get it.
All right, I'm halfway through.
I know he was injured for the Jets.
I think I'm done. I think I've proven my point. I'm going to stop sharing there.
Well, so who in their right mind, honestly, I mean, let's we're two mature adults. We've collected football literally all our lives.
Yeah.
This
is my bread and butter here.
What is the incentive for people like us to even remain in the hobby, given there's what about 35 different types of 2020 Panini?
Of 2020 Panini, yeah.
So if I'm a Packers fan and say I do want to collect Rodgers, so what are there, like 300 different Aaron Rodgers cards from 20? And if so, would I want to buy all of them and make sure they're graded PSA 10? And or buy them all raw and then send them out to get graded.
Yeah.
I've
mentioned to you before, Captain, that I'm a huge Joe Montana and Jerry Rice fan. So, until about 2009 or so, I was collecting a Jerry Rice master set and a Joe Montana set. Rice started in 85, 86 as his rookie card. Retired as a Seahawk, obviously, in 2005. He only had about 15 years of vintage.
Right.
When I started out collecting him, the master set was about 140.
Okay.
By the time I tapped out and said, no moss, it was over 1,000 cards in his master set.
I mean, that's ridiculous. That is just utterly ridiculous.
And it was like 2004. Yeah, just the same crap that I was just doing. I mean, yeah. I mean, and I'm literally like, okay, I'm 80% there. I think I was, 80%. And then somebody would add 40 cards, Panini Refractor X. And I'm like, I am not chasing this crap anymore. And I sold it. I got tired of chasing it. I mean, so obviously, if you're a set collector, you're kind of a completionist. I know there's 100 cards in the 1950 Bowman set. I have 80. I have 20 to go.
Yeah.
But when you're chasing a moving target, I want the Joe Montana master set. And I started off, it was 150. And when I finished, it was 1,000, which is legit. You're like, I'm chasing a moving target here. I'm
correct.
Oh, so, correct. So,
Well, even with me, I've been sorting all my cards lately, the football cards, just to try to figure out what I actually have. And I never realized, I think it started in 2010, 11, or 12 for Topps. There's different pose variations of the same card. And I'm saying to myself, okay, I know I don't have the variations, so I technically don't have a complete set. So how do I define a complete set? Well, I define a complete set with the non-rare variation poses.
Yeah,
because number one, I don't know what kind of packs or how they were found, or if they were only in factory sets, so on and so forth. I'm finding out the hobby boxes had a lot of these variation poses, but the retail boxes that I used to make the set didn't have them. Okay, so I'm lost there. And just this whole exercise of just studying this the last few shows makes me come this close, Joe.
Okay. Basically, can you move your hands? Can you move your hands closer? There you go. Okay. All right. I wanted to
this see. Close that my Topps football sets from 1989 or 1990 to 2015 will be sold, and I'll just stick with my run from 40. And basically, I want to stick with my run from 1948 to 1988 because 1988 for me is Topps and Fleer teams in action. The last year for Fleer in action.
Well, and there's one set in 1989. I really suggest you go after it, and it is this. Obviously.
I still have that. I still have behind me unopened pack you sent me that time, and I will not.
I keep an 89 Pacific Largent wax pack by my desk purely for comedic purposes, Bob.
Yeah, but it, to me, that was a cool set in 1989, and I still remember, even before I knew you, I was at a show, and a guy had some of the single cards from this, and I said, what are these cards from Largent? And the guy explained that they're Pacific. And we knew Pacific from baseball. We never knew him from football. And I said, wow, that's a cool set. And I hate to say it to you, I did complete the set and I did sell it at a show in the early 90s.
I'm proud of you, Captain. This is like therapy. You're just letting the love out. You're just obviously the coveted chase card in that 89 Pacific Largent set is the crotch card.
Right, right. Yeah. I remember you saying it. And then the other big thing with the Seahawks were the Oro Wheat.
Oro Wheat, yeah, 89, 88, and 89 Oro Wheat. Yeah,
right, and I remember I had a bunch of those I picked up. I have no idea, and I tried putting the set together. And I said, wow, how am I going to find them in Connecticut? They're not here.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
So those are the cool regional sets.
Oh, they are. I love really, regional sets. Like I loved cereal sets. I loved all the different oddball police sets.
I told you, like the back of Nally's potato chips.
Right, right.
Starting in like 78, they used to have Seahawks players on the back of Nally potato chips or regionals. I'd cut them out. I'd thumbtack them to my wall. I mean, I still have several of those. I mean, talk about nostalgic. I mean, I had these things hanging, you know, in my bedroom when I was a kid, you know. Yeah.
Well, it's the same. Another example, 1982 Kellogg cereal. They had posters, the team posters. I still have the four or five that I had from 1982 that I grew. And that's back then. I would always bug my mother, can you buy this cereal so I can get the cards out of it? Type of thing. And she would,
Mission accomplished.
She would let me buy one box, so at least I got one of whatever the card was or whatever, and then I would figure out as years went on, I would try to, collect them, so on and so forth. But, I really say to myself, why do I have 1989 to 2015?
Yeah.
I really don't know. And then I got other guys telling me, well, why don't you just pull the Packers out of it? And I said, why? What is the point of it? I don't have the variations. Of the different Packer guys in the later sets and whatever. So what's the point of it?
I wanted to, I think we're done sitting on your porch in a rocking chair, spitting chew, telling kids to get off our damn lawn. I love receiving Swick Enterprise, obscure envelopes. And the last episode just a great, another good one. First of all, I know I've mentioned this, but it begs repeating. Your editor's page, I always love reading.
Thank you.
First of all, I want to point out your smile.
I was much younger then, too.
Yeah.
I had a lot more hair, and my mustache was dark.
It's great. Martin Jacobs, Alphabet Backfield, I tabbed him here. Spano had a really good one of one, which I really love, play on words, just collecting. All right. Kansas City Chief, how do they rank among, the dynasties? My son and I mean, that's really topical. My son and I were actually talking about that before the Super Bowl. Cool. Like, if Mahomes wins this, is he considered one of the best? I'm like, no. Have you ever heard of Otto Graham? Which he hadn't.
Yeah.
And this one I thought was incredible. I don't know who Ben Carpenter is, but welcome to the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats. This was a great article. Talk about doing your homework.
Right.
Look at this. Look at this. That was incredible.
Right.
So,
he had the actual correspondence from that time frame, and just the incredible stuff. He's a football historian. He's really, he's got some incredible, he has an incredible library of books too, and paper items.
Yeah, his bio: Ben Carpenter owns the McDonald collection, this McDonald collection of letters. He bought his first football book when he was 10. His football book collection exceeds 2,200 volumes.
Right.
Captain, he gives you a run for the money, for your
oh,
money.
Oh yeah, I
that,
can't hear. I can't come here.
I have to admit, this was probably one of the best articles I've seen in Gridiron Greats since I wrote one.
Which
So,
one? The pencil one or?
Yeah. Well, my oh, the things we collect, probably this
That's
whatever.
true. That's true.
Yeah, but just really laid out well. I was just really impressed. And
Thank you.
you were in the back page. You had one. I really enjoyed yours, just on the USFL.
Yeah.
I loved it. Just another shout out to Gridiron Greats. And by the way, if you're watching this and you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats, what are you waiting for?
That's true.
And then also, I wanted to give a shout out to, you know, VFC founder Jeff Payne. He
Yeah. Got yours.
You know, he and, you know, friend of the show, Darren Hayes, wrote this book, Marooned. We've talked to Jeff ad nauseum about the Maroons. And this is basically new discoveries, new information. I made it to this page. Let me remove my bookmark here. I made it to this page. That basically proves I do prep for the show, by the way. Just a
I do. I know you do. I know. I appreciate that, Joe.
Chicago Cardinals challenge. So I'm up to chapter 8. I apologize. Jeff and I were texting back and forth. I asked if I could get an autographed version, and he said yes. But in the meantime, I bought one because I wanted to read it.
Okay.
So,
all right. I gotta try to I'll bug Jeff and Darren publicly. I'm still waiting for my copy.
That would be great to get both of them on. To discuss them, but very well written, and just, you know, obviously, you know, these are passion projects. I
no,
adore
yeah.
digging into something someone has spent a year really diving into, and just, you know, it's football history,
and they're preserving the history at the same time.
Yeah.
So critical to our hobby, because you know, if we don't preserve it, we don't preserve the paper items, the programs, the yearbooks, the ticket stubs. We've lost history completely. And it also leads me to believe, and I know we've talked about this numerous times, I think at some point, you know, as I'm getting up in the years, I would have no problem getting rid of most of my cards.
Yeah.
But I would have a lot of problem getting rid of a lot of my paper items.
To the right person, yeah. Well, Jeff has done a good job. I think it was like 5-6 years ago, he bought an auction that had a whole bunch of letters.
Right, right.
Stuff. And he spent a year sifting through, documenting, you know, and then, you know, wrote an article on it. But I mean, look at some of the, it's just, hang on. Some of Jeff's hobby is in here. And I love how he uses the 1926 Pottsville Maroons PCs. For a lot of the bios on people, so very well written. Tip of the hat to those two gentlemen.
Yeah, we definitely got to have them both on. I'm trying to plan out the next few weeks as far as guests.
Yeah,
so I'm going to give a shout out to them. I'm working on a super, or hopefully going to be our super collector for the summer issue, but I won't disclose it at this time. With regards to his collection of cards, which is just incredible. And a few other areas too. But getting back to our topic, what happens with all this? where are we going with this whole thing? I really don't know. I don't know. I surely don't know.
I'm not sure either. Other than just you brought up a really good point when Panini bought it out, when Topps tapped out, you know, Topps couldn't compete, you know, with the contract for it. Panini bought it out, and everybody's got to make money. It's you know, it's the same thing we're talking about with, you know, the you know, broadcast rights for NFL. I mean,
right.
You know, there's a, you know, there's a threat on VFC right now about, you know, it's a matter of time before, you know, every game, every region is pay-per-view. Oh, you want to see that, you know, that Sunday night game? That's another pay-per-view.
Right. And that, and I really believe once the new contract, and I think it's 28-29 comes
29,
up,
yeah.
That's what's going to happen. I mean, you're gone from regular network TV one way or the other.
I don't know about you, but I mean, there's a West Coast bias to, you know, to Monday Night Football.
Right.
I have such fond memories of watching Monday Night Football and eating dinner with my dad. You know, you can't do that on the East Coast because the game starts. I think I've told you that Stacey and I went to an Eagles Seahawks game in 2005. And we get to the bar at like 5 to start drinking and eating. And, you know, at 6 o'clock, we're like, hey, we got a jam, you know, to the guy at the bar. We're going to the game. He's like, it's not for 3 more hours. It was just, it had never occurred to me.
And I, you know, it's tiring on the East Coast to see a game that starts at 9:15, and if it's your team, and there were many nights I watched the Packers and I went to bed at midnight and I was up at 5 o'clock the next morning. So I always say I'm going to take a nap tonight, you know, this morning for 5 hours, go to work. At least I saw the game, but you know, now that I'm semi-retired, I can do that. It's not a big deal. But the game won't be on any.
Yeah.
I'm not going to subscribe.
Unless you're going to subscribe to something for $79 a year that you're going to watch two games on.
It's happening now already with baseball, and it's going to be happening with football. Football is the perfect sport for a guy, let's say, who lives in wherever, who's a Patriots fan that lives in Texas. He'll pay the X amount of dollars to watch the Patriots. You know,
but it's tough because I have such good memories of, you know, a lot of football that I watch now is kind of background. You're making breakfast in the morning on a Sunday, football going on. I'll catch a quarter of it, come back a little later, catch the finals, catch a little bit. You know, I mean, it's different. There's a game on Sunday and there's a game on Monday. Probably one game on Sunday that I'll be like, oh, I got to watch this. But I'm going to tune in at the start of the second half.
Right.
This junk wax era, you can just see the proliferation of it, where it's just literally more cards, and you know, more cards graded in 1 year than in 5 decades or 4 decades.
Right.
Granted, you know, it's been brought up, you know, what percentage of people who collect vintage have it graded? You know, 50% roughly, versus people ripping wax, pulling the chase cards out, running over to PSA to get graded so they can flip them at the show. And then, you know, how many cards have been lost, you know, before TBGs came around even. So, I mean, you've got a lot of, you know, this Venn diagram of it, but no matter what, that, you know, the math don't lie. There's just, it's a tsunami of graded cards. I mean, you know, 2020 to 2023, you know, 2.736, 4.5, 5 million cards. It wasn't. 5 million cards in 4 years, excuse me, 4.5 million. There's been total 12,218,000 cards graded. A third of them, and since football cards since 1935, a third of them have been in the last 4 years. That's a trip.
And just tell me, and nobody can, where the cards are, who's actually buying them, and what really is the market for that? To me, I mean, if the last two shows are any indication, and the last 3 years of shows I've been doing here is any indication, we're in trouble. I'm just put it bluntly, we're in trouble. Because again, there becomes such a limited market for our stuff, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem that something that is completely unhistorical is just used as a commodity overtakes the vintage pureness of the hobby. That's what really bothers me more than anything else. And I think that's because I've been in the hobby all my life. I've seen it evolve. I've seen changes. And I fully understand changes got to occur. But the changes that are going on in the hobby right now really make no sense to me whatsoever. They really don't. They really don't. It's a flipping hobby. That's all it is right now.
Yeah.
And a big point for me will be, I'm going to the National. I'll be on the floor walking around for 2 days. And if I see what I saw in Wilmington at the National, then I know there's going to probably be two or three shows in the country I'll be willing to go to that are actually vintage card shows, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know you're going to see it. I mean, we've seen it the last several, you know, several years at other shows. I'm glad. So that sounds like you plan on being in Chicago.
Yeah, you know? I will be there. I'm flying in on Thursday for the dinner. Hopefully, if my plane flight is on time, I'll get there Thursday afternoon. I can check in to the hotel. Then I can rest for a couple hours, go to the dinner or VFC dinner Thursday night. Friday and Saturday, I'll be at the show with a paid admission, something I haven't done in 14, 15 years since I've been a dealer for so many years. So I actually got my ticket for Friday and Saturday paid, and I'll be going, and then I'll fly home.
How much was that? Because
I only got the regular pass for $25 for the day. Okay. And if I waited to June 30th, it goes up to $30. So you got to buy it now.
Oh, no.
The 5 million other people that are buying it. And
yeah, oh, no. What's the, you said for the regular ticket, is there another?
So you can buy the early bird to get into the show a half hour before the show starts. And I think that's $200 for 5 days, or, and I'm not going to be there Friday. I'm only going to be there Friday and Saturday. So I'll just
Regular
admission. I'll get in at 10. I'll leave at 5, and I'm done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not concerned.
Yeah, I got to swing some wax packs by Steve Hart, BBCE.
Okay.
Some GAI wax packs to swing by. So I'm the same. I'm probably going to get in Thursday afternoon.
Okay. All right,
get good. BFC dinner, go to a baseball game, you know, with some guys from the other side of the street.
Okay.
And then, you know, hit the show Friday and Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, and then I'm flying home Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting, my flight has changed 3 different times now.
Oh.
But I'm still scheduled to get in relatively early Chicago time, so which is what I want, so I can check into the hotel, just dump my stuff, relax, change. Then I'll go to the dinner and just relax on Thursday. And then Friday and Saturday will be long days at the show. And
okay, so obviously you're not setting up.
Oh, no, no. No, I'm done setting up at the National.
Okay.
They clamp down on people like myself who would share space with other dealers. They've gone anal with everything. And what really cracks me up is the guys who've taken over the show used to put on a show at the University of New Haven in West Haven, Connecticut. And I set up with them back then, and I sold stuff to those guys back in the 90s. And to see what they're doing right now with the National, I get it to a certain degree, but I'll go on record in saying these guys have really changed from their roots 30 some odd years ago when I knew them. When we used to do a college auditorium show, and a lot of guys there like myself and them at the time, you know, and we set up, we did what we had to do to make a buck and to present, you know, promote the hobby, so on and so forth. So it kind of cracks me up. It cracks me up now. And
the business changes. I mean,
they've gotten very big. And it was funny, in Atlantic City, one of the fellows, who I won't mention who it was, he looks at me and I look at him, and I said to him, "You really don't remember me, do you?" And he says, "No, not really. Am I supposed to know you?" I said, "Yeah, you should kind of think back to University of New Haven back in the 90s, and then maybe you'll put two and two together." And I did football. And then he kind of looked at me, and he kind of stepped back when I said that. And then I walked away from him because he knew, you know, you don't know where your roots are. That's okay. That's cool.
Shouldn't forget. Yeah.
I don't forget, though. You know,
of course, you had your mustache, you know, was a little darker.
It's been the same, but you know, we were a much closer knit hobby back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And there's a lot of guys I knew, you know, who did the shows for 20, 30 years, you know.
Bob, whose mustache is more famous, yours or Sam Elliott?
Elliott's, not mine.
Really? Okay.
Mine is not, even though I've had it since 1976, it is not.
You've never shaved it since 76?
Yeah. when I was a senior in high, actually 75. So it's 50 years I've had my mustache. So
you, since you were a senior in high school, you grew your mustache.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've never left. Okay. I never
shaved it off. So.
That's pretty good. Something to be proud of.
I don't know what my lip looks like. And my daughter doesn't know. Nobody knows. So.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. I love it.
All right, we're almost out of time. quick wrap up. Hopefully we're going to be back next week with a couple of shows. I'm working on a couple of guests. And last week of May, we're not going to be recording, and then we'll be back in June. Again, junk wax, junk slabs, I leave it up to you. Our audience, it is what it is, and that's it. And you got our report on it and how we feel about it. Whether you agree or disagree, everyone's entitled to their own opinion on it. And that's
the numbers don't lie.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. That's all we have. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Go Steve Largent. Buy some 1965 Topps wax packs if you see them out there. And break them open. Get a name. It's rookie.
Ooh.
Not grade it, though. And try to put the set together or whatever. And we'll take it.
You got it. Thank you, Captain.
All right. Thanks, Joe. And we'll be in touch. Take care. Bye. Thanks for watching.
Hey there. Welcome to Music Meets Sports, where sports legends meet custom soundtracks and unforgettable stories come to life through music. I'm Sean, the marketing director. Music Meets Sports was created by music producer Ronald Tyke Oliver to bridge generations, educate fans, and celebrate the greatness of both current and former athletes. We craft original songs about heroes in basketball, football, baseball, boxing, and beyond, highlighting their early struggles and personal battles, their faith, character, and drive, their inspiring victories on and off the field. Across genres, hip-hop, R&B, rock, pop, even country, we reintroduce fans to their favorite athletes in a way they've never heard before. From Babe Ruth to Reggie White, from rising WNBA stars to timeless NFL greats, we give legends their flowers in full surround sound. Stream or download our music now on Apple Music, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Visit musicmeetsports.org to explore the catalog, hear new releases, and join the movement that's preserving sports history, one song at a time. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Music Meets Sports. That's sports with a Z. Music Meets Sports, the raw energy of sports, the emotional depth of music.